It is 23 and a half after the hour on a Tuneful Tuesday here along the Broken Road, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a biochemist by trade. Well, I can't say that by trade anymore. He is once a biochemist, always a biochemist, but now he's applying his talents and his knowledge and his aptitudes to the wine business at Valle della Pace, a winery in Garden Valley, Texas. Don, also a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and he joins us just about every Tuesday morning here. Don, happy Tuesday. How are things in Garden Valley?
Well, they're doing quite well. We had just some rain yesterday, which was great, and we should get some more rain today. Actually, we should get rain all this week. It has been extremely dry. This summer.
Yeah, drought conditions. Is this the tropical storm Gordon that's throwing that stuff up in your direction there?
Well, it may be. I'd have to, I haven't looked at the weather maps to see. But it's a welcome sight to see a little rain, because we were, as I said, we were very, 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 very dry this summer. And I've been pumping the water on the vines, the grapevines.
Mm-hmm.
So this will give my irrigation pump a little rest.
How's the water level? You've got a beautiful pond on the grounds there, and is that where your water comes from for the grapes?
Oh yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes, I do have my irrigation system connected up to the county water, but if I use that, it's very, very expensive.
I think so.
Because I'm basically, whenever I irrigate, especially during a hot summer, I'm pumping about 10,000 gallons of water on the vines. So, yes, we have a 1 acre pond on the property, and it's down about 2 feet.
Wow. Okay. Well, have you named that pond? That pond should have a name. In East Dakota, they put names on lakes. If it's over, it's had to be over 10 acres in size, though, doesn't it, David? Technically, to have a lake name there. David's going to have to. Google that.
I think you can name. You can name anything you want to.
Okay. All right. Well,
it's on your own property.
It would be a Valle della Pace pond. I suppose we could do that. We've got an article in front of us here that reveals something. Well, it's not startling to Don or to me particularly, but it is to the old earthers out there, and it has to do with limestone. I remember I was in Kentucky one time, and I was talking with a fellow from a local from Kentucky there, and we were talking about all the beautiful things that Kentucky has to offer, and among them racehorses. And he says, "You know what makes horses? Why this is horse country?" And I said, "I have no idea why." He said, "It's the limestone, because there are limestone caverns underground through this whole part of northern Kentucky, and the water runs through it and carries a particular mix of minerals to it that is just happens to be very good for horses. They thrive in those conditions, and so apparently, at least a part of Kentucky is situated atop limestone formations. And we all know about Mammoth Cave and other limestone is usually, isn't that what forms in caves, Don? I mean, it actually creates limestone, doesn't it?
Well, yes, limestone is in the obviously the upper surface of the earth, and the question is, one of the questions is, how did limestone form in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, often we think that all the minerals that we have here, today, it's just a result of slow processes, and it took millions, if not, thousands, if not millions of years to form. And if you go into one of those limestone caves, it doesn't matter where you go. Of course, they give you the propaganda that it took a long, long time to develop the stalagmites and the stalactites. And so don't touch them, because after all, you're contaminating natural process that mm-hmm. is there. But the fact remains that, if you think about it, and this is just really, puzzling to me, why this long time period, other than, wrong assumptions, why that even has crept in at all. because it's very easy to make limestone. It's very easy to make, calcium carbonate, which is the major component of limestone. Calcium carbonate, all you need is carbon dioxide, and you need calcium. And if you take carbon dioxide, mix it with water, you get seltzer water or fizzy water, And if you then expose the fizzy water to a calcium-rich, minerals, then what precipitates out is calcium carbonate or magnesium carbonate or a combination of both. And, that's a lot less soluble in water than carbonic acid, which is what fizzy water is. And since when you do mix pump CO2, for example, in water, the pH of the water is fairly low because of the carbonic acid that is produced. That helps dissolve the minerals in stone. Actually, an energy consortium in Iceland has a consortium called CarbFix. They want to solve the CO2 problem so that we don't destroy the earth by burning all this fossil fuels that we've been burning. And
so they were basically formed to investigate the global warming deal, huh? The maladies involved in that.
Well, the consortium was put together to say, can we the CO2 that we produce, let's say in our energy factories, can we take that and fix it in the ground? Iceland is pretty much made up of, if not completely, made up of volcanic rock. And so basalt is the mineral, if you will. And it's just basically cooled down lava. But the cooled down lava, as lava cools from a volcano, there's a lot of gases in it. And so it produces this, it's not spongy, but it's, very open structure. It's
porous, porous. Yeah.
Porous. It's very porous as compared to, granite, for example, which is not porous. So anyway, the experiment that they did was, so they took the CO2 that was coming out of their energy plant. They mixed it with they bubbled it through a lot of water, as they say, a large volume of water. Then they pumped it about a mile away and put it into an injection site, an injection well that was 3,200 feet deep. And they just kind of left it and was doing this, for a while. And then finally, a little over a year later, they decided, hey, let's drill down and see what happened. So that's exactly what they did. They drilled down, and lo and behold, in the basalt was this white mineral substance, which, of course, after analyzing, they said, oh, it's calcite. That's calcium carbonate, magnesium carbonate is calcite. And so they were forming limestone. So the limestone, now, I suspect they say that, after a year, 400 days is what they, when they first dug down to say what had happened to their carbonated water, if you will. But I suspect that had they dug down a lot sooner than 400 days, they would have found the same mineral. And that indeed it forms very, very quickly, because under those conditions, of course, you had acidic water, which, like I said, dissolves the minerals in the stone. And because you had basalt, which is very, very porous, minerals were readily available to the water. And so the calcium and the magnesium in the basalt would have reacted almost instantaneously with the carbonated water that was being pumped down. And so instead of this being a very, very slow process, they were, everybody, you know, they were saying, oh, gee, we are very, very surprised that this, that we found this. We were expecting this to take, you know, thousands of years. That's what, you know, the scientists have been saying. And lo and behold, when they do the experiment, it's very quick. Well, as a chemist, yes, okay, I'm a biochemist, but as a chemist.
Mm-hmm. Close enough. That's close enough. Yeah.
You know, it's, if you take, you know, if you take carbonated water, and let's say you take calcium chloride, which is soluble in water, and you mix the two, how fast do you think calcium carbonate is going to precipitate out? It's almost instantaneous. I mean, it's, yeah, okay, you got to stir it a little while, but it starts precipitating very, very quickly. So why people even thought that this process, you know, takes, you know, thousands, if not, you know, millions of years to form is beyond me, because with the chemistry that we have today and has been around for a long, long, long time, one would have said, predicted that, hey, you could have dug down 2 weeks after you started injection and you would have found calcium carbonate.
Well, Don, I have a theory as to why they were surprised. It's because they bought into the assumption that it takes eons for rocks to form. And they were taught that their whole career. And they didn't look at simple laboratory experiments that proved otherwise in the case of limestone. How's that for a theory?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And most people's assumptions are wrong. And one needs to ask the question, okay, we've got all this limestone all around the world. Where did it come from in the first place? All right, well, let's expand this experiment to a global experiment. And let's say, the Earth started off being one landmass, as we've talked about before, called Pangaea. That began to break up, and as it was breaking up, you had a lot of volcanic activity. Oh, you mean to tell me you were forming basalt as the Earth was breaking up? Yes, because of all of the volcanic activity. Now, the Earth was covered with vegetation before that time. How do we know that? Well, because the historical book called Genesis tells us that it was a very lush environment before the flood, for example. And this lush environment would have had a lot of a lot of vegetation, a lot of animals, a lot, you know, it was, as God said after the 6 days, he said, it's, you know, everything is perfect. Everything is very, very good. And so the environment was perfect for not only growing growing vegetation, but for animals that, you know, he created to put on the planet, and for man as well. So everything was perfect. You have this breaking up of the continents, a lot of volcanic activity forming the basalt. Then what's going to happen to some of the vegetation? It's going to burn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pumping a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. There was probably, you know, tons and tons, if not megatons, of CO2 in the atmosphere at the time of the flood. So now the CO2 gets mixed with the rain as it's coming down, you know, from the sky, and it gets mixed with the water. You've got freshly made basalt from all of the volcanic activity, and those two ingredients are now forming your limestone, the limestone caves that we see, and, you know, the limestone that we pretty much see all around the globe. So the limestone formations didn't take millions or thousands and thousands of years. The limestone formation probably, you know, as I said, was the result of the breaking up of the continent into the various continents that we have today, and the continental plates moving away from each other, and all of the volcanic activity that was happening, and the burning of the vegetation that was readily available on the continental masses. So, and it's been suggested that the activities of the flood lasted between 500 to 700 years, post the flood, if you will, until the continent started to settle down and the volcanic activity started to settle down. Then, certainly within that time frame, we must have had the formation of plenty of limestone during that time.
Do you have any sense, Don, that the major limestone deposits around the Earth coincide with maybe old volcanic activity in the same geographical locations? Is there a correlation?
Well, I haven't studied that, so I don't know. But it would be an interesting thing to look into. I would suspect that it would, because you know, where you have obviously where you have a lot of basalt or volcanic dust. I mean, you know, you would have a lot of minerals in even volcanic ash, for example, that could then also be used. Now, you don't need necessarily basalt, but you would need, you know, some readily available minerals that could be easily dissolved. Now, this is interesting to think about. You know, we often talk about acid rain because of the sulfur dioxide, for example, that gets pumped from also burning dirty fossil fuels, which has a lot of sulfur in it, and then you produce acid rain. Well, if there was a lot of CO2 in the atmosphere at the time of the flood, it would have been acidic, and that would have helped, you know, dissolve the minerals that were being basically spewed out of the earth at the time from all this volcanic activity.
Interesting. Yeah, I've got a link in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you'd care to follow along in this article. It's a short one, but it's a fascinating one. And again, you know, just it impresses me how easily science gets surprised by knowledge they should have had already. But because they've followed down various rabbit trails that either custom or habit or tradition dictates, that they miss the information and don't put the two or the three or the four together and reevaluate what they thought they knew all along, because that's what science is supposed to be all about. Shouldn't science be about changing knowledge constantly?
Well, as you acquire, obviously, more knowledge, and then you should, as we've spoken about before on this program, you should adjust your hypotheses based on the new knowledge that you have. However, they could have come to the correct conclusion by just reading the history book. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been passed down to us, which is the Bible. I mean, a lot of the Bible is a written record of what had taken place in Earth's history. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of the early chapters in Genesis is very much not a detailed description, but just enough description to say, hey, maybe we should take this into consideration. Maybe there was a global flood. Maybe that's the reason why we have 2,000 meters of sediment on the coastlines of the continents. And it tapers off as you go into the inner parts of the continents. maybe that explains better all of this sedimentary material and all of the volcanic activity as the continents were breaking up. So if you use the information that is there and then do do your experiments, as was done here with the injection into the well, you wouldn't necessarily be surprised. You would say, aha, yeah, this the story, not the story, but the history that we read in Genesis is actually correct.
Yeah, but I think it would be wrong to depend, say, exclusively on geologists or chemists or physicists or botanists or other categories of science, because I'm truly not sure of how much cross communication there is between the disciplines. It's a little bit like archaeology, where for years and years and years archaeologists would go out and examine things and dig things up but wouldn't talk to each other. And once you get a body of knowledge exposed to everybody, they start to say, oh, hey, well, I found this over here, too, and I found this over here, too. And you tie it together, and you get the bigger picture. Now, there's an old philosophical maxim that I think maybe these geologists should be paying attention, or science in general should be paying attention to, and that is, there is no such thing in real life as a contradiction. You know, two absolute facts that one denies the other, there's something wrong. There cannot be an actual contradiction. So if in your examination of the world you encounter a contradiction, the thing to do is to go back and re-examine your basic premise, because it's wrong. It has an error. And that's what science seems to be so reluctant to do.
Well, it takes a long time to change people's minds. You know, it's when folks thought that the Earth was flat, and if you sailed off into the ocean blue, you would just fall off the edge of the world. It took a little while, you know, for folks to realize, hey, you know, our globe is a sphere. It's not flat. So, yeah, old theories do die hard. They take a while to change. But they don't have to, because, like I said, if you avail yourself to the available information that has been here for thousands of years, then you would tend to make less mistakes, I would think, and tend to not run into the contradictions that you're talking about.
I think so. We're talking with Dr. Don Clark, who's a biochemist, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and I want to mention to you their website is creationmoments.com. And at creationmoments.com, you'll encounter a wealth of scientific information that supports the biblical creation story. And if you haven't been exposed to it, it'll be pretty amazing. There's videos and blogs and articles galore, books. It's a great place to check this thing out. If you haven't looked into the biblical story of creation, yes, there is science that thoroughly supports that. You find some of that, a lot of it, at creationmoments.com. Don, thanks so much for joining us today. Looking forward to next Tuesday. And we wish you and your grapes well. And may your pond increase to overflowing.
Good luck to the grapes.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And you folks have a great week.
Don, we'll
see
you.
You too, Don.
Bye-bye.